Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, September 11th. I'm Ray Graff. You wanted it? You got it. Rich Guthrie is back at WAMC for today's show to share his birding knowledge and answer your questions. Also joining us is Catherine Schneider, past president of the New York State Ornithological Association. You got a bird question? Now's the time to call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Catherine Schneider, and your birding questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and Rich Guthrie is here. Also, Catherine Schneider. They're here to answer your questions about birds. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Catherine taught biology and ornithology at the University of Richmond and Hudson Valley Community College. For 14 years, she directed the New York Natural Heritage Program, a biodiversity inventory effort run by the Nature Conservancy and the State Department of Environmental Conservation. As a consultant, she conducted bird surveys for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She is a past president of the New York State Ornithological Association, a former member of the Columbia County Environmental Management Council, and a Columbia Land Conservancy volunteer. She currently co-chairs the steering committee for New York's third Breeding Bird Atlas. If you have a question about birds, this would be a really good time to call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, Catherine Schneider, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Good afternoon.
Nice to be here.
Nice to have you both here. Catherine, once again, let us know what this Breeding Bird Atlas project is.
The Breeding Bird Atlas project is our third effort to map the distribution of breeding birds in New York State. There was one done in the 1980s and one done completed in 2005, and now it's been 20 years and we're ready to start our third atlas.
This is exciting. And what do you hope to learn?
We hope to learn what populations have expanded their ranges and are now breeding in different parts of the state, which ones have retracted. We're looking for new species that have found their way into the state as breeders. There's just a whole litany of things we can learn from a breeding bird atlas.
Do you have any expectations, trends-wise?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are certain species that have expanded their range. And we know rusty blackbird, for example, is much less common than it used to be in previous years. But
all sorts of exciting discoveries await us for this Atlas project.
And how is this different than, say, eBird?
Oh, very similar. In fact, the platform that the Atlas will be using will be an eBird platform. That's eBird.org. A site that is administered by Cornell University, National Audubon Society, and the input information will go via eBird. And so it is very similar in the same, but the eBird goes beyond the breeding season. This is focused on nesting birds, where they are, what they are, where they are. And eBird is year-round. So
right, but what I'm saying is you can more or less get a sense of what the trends are by looking at the data from eBird, right?
Yes, but the Atlas project will be a targeted effort, where there are areas in the state that may be wanting more coverage, the Atlas committee will be directing that coverage to get in there and find out what's going on.
We basically divide the state up using a grid of topographic maps, and we're going to be sampling at least one portion of every quad in the state as a way of getting a big picture of the distribution throughout the whole state.
How many people are involved in the Breeding Bird Atlas project?
Well, we don't know yet. We're relying heavily on volunteers.
And you're looking for volunteers now?
Not quite yet. We're interested in training people so that they know how to use eBird for Atlas purposes. It's a little different from regular eBird where you're just putting sightings in. Here we want to know breeding evidence. Mm. So we're going to be asking people to use breeding codes, going one step beyond the normal eBird entry for most people. But we will be having signups starting in in January of 2020.
And where will people be able to find out about that?
There'll be a website. It's eBird. I have to do this off the top of my head. It's
we can find out later.
Yeah, if you go to the
if you just Google New York Breeding Bird Atlas 3, and you will get to the. It starts out with eBird.org, and then it's /NY/Atlas, I believe.
Yeah, the New York Ornithological Association website will direct you there as well. NYOS.
Go ahead.
No, and
NewYorkBirds.org.
NewYorkBirds.org. NYBirds.org.
And I assume there are similar efforts in Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire?
Not yet. I mean, there have been in the past, but we are the first state to be doing a third breeding bird atlas. Mm. And other states have also used eBird, like Wisconsin just completed its second bird atlas using eBird as a data entry platform. Other states are in the process. So Virginia, for example, and Maine are doing an atlas now, and I imagine other states will start their. They've done 20-year intervals, so they have to wait their turn.
When they find out how much fun it is, they all want to do it.
Now, speaking of fun, yesterday on the program, Rich, we did a show about antiques. One caller had a case full of 150-year-old stuffed animals,
dead birds,
and birds.
Yes.
And the antique guy, Mark Lawson, said, "Oh my gosh, you're not going to try to sell those birds.
You don't want to try to sell those birds."
And you wanted to add something to this.
Well, yes, there was some information about the Migratory Bird Treating Act, which has been in effect for more than 100 years.
Yeah,
and the whole business behind that act—it's an international. Treaty with Canada, Mexico, and it's to protect these migratory birds from this very sort of activity that was going on back in the turn of the Victorian era. And it was a popular pastime for country folk to get out there and shoot as many birds and animals as they could and, you know, bring them home, brag about them, and some of them put them in their trophy displays.
And apparently that is the case here. Now, it's not strictly speaking illegal for this guy to have them, right?
It is strictly speaking illegal. They are not,
well, they're 150 years old. What do you do with them? He didn't obviously kill the animals.
No, obviously. There are some very stringent provisions for transferring those to a legally authorized repository. But if you can, and this is we're getting into some technical and tricky legal quagmire here.
Yeah.
But if you can document and prove that these things predate grandfather, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and subsequent protections that have been afforded birds. The Treaty Act did not protect hawks and owls for a long, long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Now they are all protected.
I see.
So if you could predate any of these protection clauses and prove it.
What would you count the rings? How would you do this?
Well, it's a good question, yeah. And the chances are you will not prevail.
Well, Rich, you seem like you're pretty strident about this.
Well, it just to prevent this sort of thing from coming up again, and the eyes of many people, this has a rather ludicrous twist to it. In other words, it is actually technically illegal to go out and pick up a feather of a blue jay and bring it home.
Right.
The little children, beautiful blue feather. No, you can't do that. Of course, there's not going to be much in the way of enforcement for that sort of thing. But technically speaking, you can't make a headdress out of blue jays' feathers. You can't go around there and collecting hawk feathers and making a display for your mantelpiece. And that's precisely why this act came into being, because birds were being persecuted almost to the point of extinction back in the day. We caught them in the nick of time. We put this act into provision.
I'm surprised you didn't call us yesterday and say, trace that call.
Not my job.
I mean, they're 150 years old. When was the treaty?
I'm not a cop.
When was the treaty?
1909 through 1919.
So he's good.
Well, he could be.
150 years old.
Put a little dust powder on top of a bird and you think you got it made, ain't going to work.
Okay.
I know.
All right, let's take a call or two before the first break. Catherine Schneider is here. Rich Guthrie, he is all revved up. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
How you doing?
Good.
I would like to ask the man, where are hummingbirds from? And do they chirp?
Do they what?
Chirp.
Chirp.
Yes, they do. They have a beautiful, cute little chirp. Hummingbirds We have one type of hummingbird in our backyards. That's the ruby-throated hummingbird. Out west, down in the southwest Arizona up into British Columbia, they have a variety of hummingbirds that just occur along the western coast. But they are here, the ruby-throated hummingbirds, and they're still around, but they're leaving any day now. They're fueling up to head to Mexico.
That's where they're from?
Well, that's where they go back to. They're sort of they're dual citizenship.
Where are they born?
They're born here.
Oh, they are born here. So they're from here.
Yes.
And then they go south.
And yes, there are hummingbirds in Puerto Rico, that different kinds of hummingbirds, and in the Caribbean islands, a whole different slew of different varieties. But here in the Northeast, north of Florida, we have but one species. And out west, when you get to Texas, Arizona, there are different ones.
Now, the hummingbirds around here, Chuck, thanks for the call. The hummingbirds around here are very small.
Yes.
And I would assume you have to be relatively small to beat your wings that fast and hover. But what's the largest hummingbird?
They're probably the size of your thumb and pinky finger extended.
That's pretty big.
Relatively speaking, yeah. And those are South American species for the most part.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Catherine Schneider. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Birds Today with Rich Guthrie and Catherine Schneider. The number to call is 800-348-2551. You are the author of a very fine book, Birding the Hudson Valley, right?
Well, thank you. Yes.
Nice. And you brought it. Show it to me again.
Yes.
Look at that. Lovely. Lovely.
It's really good. It's really a comprehensive guide to getting around the Hudson Valley to find birds. I mean, it's more than just what is it. It's where to go, how to find it.
Now, you have an event coming up that you'd like to discuss, Catherine.
Yes, the New York State Birders Conference and ISOA annual meeting is taking place this weekend in Kingston at the Best Western Hotel and Conference Center. And this is being hosted by the Catskill Center for Conservation and Development. They annually have a meeting that they call Taking Flight. And this year, the New York State Ornithological Association is holding its delegates meeting in conjunction with this meeting.
Ah.
So there are field trips, there are speakers, there are book signings. I'll be signing my book there, but so will two other authors. Nathan Pipolo is the keynote speaker at the banquet, and he will be talking about bird song. He's developed he's the author of the Peterson Field Guide to Bird Sounds.
Oh, yeah.
And his talk is about the language of birds.
Oh, very interesting. Now, does he know that Rich is a beautiful mimic of all these fine birds?
Don't know. Maybe Rich will have to demonstrate.
Maybe you should jump up on the table, Rich.
Yes, we could do stump the speaker with bird calls.
That would be entertaining. So later in the evening, things get a little loose at these events.
Well, let's hope we don't get too carried away with these.
There's a trivia contest on Friday night, which should be very interesting.
Yes, lots of fun.
And how do people find out more about this event?
In order to find out about this event, you can go to newyorkbirds.org, which is the New York State Ornithological website, or the catskillcenter.org, which is all sponsoring the event, and they have information on their website. But there's a registration form. You can register at the door. You can come to just part of the meeting if you want to.
Is this okay for people who don't know anything about birds, but they're interested?
Actually,
or is this, they'll feel intimidated?
I think there's going to be something for everyone at this meeting. There are some very introductory talks. There's going to be a talk about the Bird Atlas. Julie Hart, our Atlas Project Coordinator, is going to talk about the New York State Breeding Bird Atlas. And Andy Mason,
Been here.
Yeah, and is treasurer of the New York State Ornithological Association, is going to give a talk of an introduction to birding.
Oh.
So there'll be something for beginning birders as well as more experienced birders.
And field trips and even a boat ride on the Hudson River.
Oh, fantastic. Right. And that's this weekend?
That's this weekend.
Terrific.
Starting Friday.
This email came in from Dee in Mountainville. Don't know if you have read the article in yesterday's New York Times about the tribute lights beamed from the 9/11 memorial in Manhattan. For those listeners who might not know about it, could you speak a little about its effects on migrating birds?
Well, I will. Thank you. The 9/11 commemorative event is very special to me, has very special deep meanings for me, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak a little bit about it. The tribute lights were established to commemorate and remember those who have perished in that terrible attack. They are lit up at this time of year on 9/11, and what they are intended to do is to show, is to display a symbol of remembrance. This is also the time of year that many, many, many birds are migrating through the night skies. And they migrate at night heading to South America, our songbirds, tanagers, warblers, flycatchers, finches, and the like. And they are strongly attracted to lights at night. And in the past, they found out that these birds would get into the column of the 9/11 World Trade Center Remember Lights and will stay inside that cone of light, not wanting to venture back out into the darkness. They come back and back, and they swirl around until they just drop out of exhaustion.
Oh.
And so in recognition of this and in appreciation for our songbirds that are migrating, they do dim or turn down the lights as appropriate when they get word from observers, volunteers who will watching the scene. And they will turn down the lights so the birds will not be drawn into this lethal attraction.
Oh, I didn't know that. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Catherine Snyder at Rich Guthrie here to answer your bird questions. And Colleen in Albany. Colleen, you're on.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
I have a recording of a bird that I think is a Carolina wren, and I would, if I could play it for you, I'd like you to confirm that it is and also tell me how rare they are or if they're becoming more commonplace in our area.
Fine and dandy. Go ahead.
All right. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I hear it.
I think there's a good chance that's a tufted titmouse.
Yeah, that's nice try. That was not a Carolina wren, at least to my
okay.
ears. Tufted titmouse. It has that two note song that sounds like it's saying, Peter, Peter, Peter.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a good recording of a tufted titmouse. Carolina wrens are here. They're not especially rare. They used to be. It's one of those southern bird species that have come north in the recent decades, right behind on the tail of the cardinal, the mockingbird, and some other bird species, which is what the Atlas Project will be further documenting. But in any event, the Carolina wren is here now. And Catherine, you were mentioned earlier, you still have some nesting in your yard.
Yes, I've got a pair that's nesting in my hanging planter. It has a begonia in it. And I've been watering the begonia very carefully around the nest for a long period of time. There's five eggs in that nest. It's taken them a month to lay five eggs. So I'm curious to see if they're going to actually sit on these eggs and hatch them.
Well, they're going to be pushing the season to get those eggs hatched out and fledged before the snow flies.
Well, Colleen, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Birds today, and Joe is in New Baltimore. Joe, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Great show, as usual. I have a question about hummingbirds, but before I get to that, I'd just like to wish my neighbor, Rich, good luck in the upcoming election. Maybe I'll see you next Thursday at the meet and greet.
What election?
Oh, well,
what are you running for, Rich?
Well, I'm in the race. I'm there to make a difference in the town of New Baltimore, New York.
Oh, I did not know
I'm a candidate for the town board, and thank you very much, Joe. Looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, all right, fair
enough.
You're
welcome, and you will have my vote, sir, come this election day. Anyway.
That was unsolicited.
We got you. It was unsolicited. All right, now your question.
Yeah. I'll expect a check in the mail.
No favors, friend. Nope.
Okay, even though we're neighbors. Huh?
Right.
All right, hummingbirds. I saw a display that I hadn't seen before this. I had a female sitting on the clothesline where I have my hummingbird feeder, and another hummingbird landed next to it. Couldn't tell it was a male right away because I didn't see his ruby throat, but all of a sudden he started flashing his red at the female, almost like that ship-to-ship communication that they have with the spotlights and the little louvers.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that before? You have?
Yes.
Okay.
And
I had never seen it before.
Well, basically, it depends on the time of year. Hummingbirds are still here. They arrived in May. They'll leave in September. And a few will stick around into October. But The male will use that ruby throat to exactly as you described it, to signal to the female and, in fact, other males that you're mine and this place is taken.
A flasher. Okay. Yeah, this was earlier in the summer, maybe even late spring.
Right.
Before they had nested, I assume. And they were still at the hummingbird feeder. So
that was part of his courtship, a little dance for him.
Yeah.
All right,
great.
Thanks,
right.
Joe. We appreciate the call. It's Gary.
We certainly do.
Gary, you're on.
Good afternoon. So I also have a bird call question. Unfortunately, I don't have any recording of it. A little background. I live fairly close to the Mohawk River. I don't know if people know the stockade section, and I hear this bird elsewhere in the Capital District, so I don't know how widespread it is or whether it's a water bird or not a water bird, but I just wanted to give you that orientation. And it has, unlike your tufted titmouse, it only has a single two-note call, so it doesn't do, you know, two or three in a pattern, but mm-hmm. Two notes, and it seems to go, I'm not real musical, but it seems to go from like a C down to an A or something like that. So it's higher to lower, two notes, and that's as much information as I can give you.
Are they separate notes or do they run together?
It's not a run or a trill.
You mean like a slur?
But, right, or but a whistle.
Or more like, you know, a
Phoebe. Like a whistle. Of two distinct notes, but one immediately following the other.
Go ahead, so Rich, do it. You know what it is.
Well, Catherine here came up with a good suggestion.
I think it might be a black-capped chickadee.
A black-capped chickadee.
What does that sound like?
Really?
Is that it?
That's very close. That could be it.
Okay.
They're quite vocal.
It's
quite
very loud. I was going to say it's very loud.
It's very loud. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that works.
It's very loud. But a chickadee, I understand, to be a very small bird, but...
Small but loud.
Yeah. Too big. Their song is too big for their size.
Okay.
Well, it could be.
And
unlike, I mean, most people are familiar with the chickadee-dee-dee-dee. That's more like a call. But this is a courtship vocalization, and they do it this time of year.
And they love to hear you imitate them. Try it.
Do they really?
Yeah, they do. They're friendly little guys.
And they come over and say hello?
They
do. Do
they
really?
In their chickadee little way, they do.
Oh, that's cute.
And it is clearly just those two notes, as Catherine, tried to illustrate. Illustrate's not the right word, but just two notes, and it's high to a little bit lower. So, thank you.
I'm going to put Gary. My money on that tip.
Well, I appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds Today. Catherine Schneider and Rich Guthrie here to answer your questions. Anne in Halcott Center. Anne, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is also hummingbird, a couple of questions regarding to hummingbirds. To make their brew, I understand it's four parts water to one part sugar. And is that supposed to be boiled and then simmered for about 20 minutes or something so that it doesn't turn rancid? I mean, it doesn't ferment, you know, when it's in the feeder?
It doesn't
or
matter.
Or do you just mix the water and sugar and serve it that way?
Yeah, just go ahead and mix it. It doesn't matter. I warm mine up just to dissolve it sooner, quicker. But the more important thing is when you put it out is to not leave it out in hot days for too long. So that
too long, right? Yeah, right. It turns sour, right?
Yes.
But it doesn't. It doesn't have to be cooked, though. Yeah, it doesn't have to be boiled.
No, not necessarily.
Oh.
That's no.
But, I thought I was told. Okay. And my second question, I think, has been answered already. When is it time to take down the feeders?
Oh no! But good question. Good question. Don't take it down until the snow flies. Well, we had a lady down in Binghamton that had her snow left it out.
Yeah,
I would say, but nonetheless.
Why?
Right around. Well, just didn't bring it back in.
What's careless about that?
Nothing except that it's out there, probably for the most part,
fermenting.
Doing not much good.
Well, clean it out in the spring, right?
Yes.
All right. Anyway,
but in any event, right around Thanksgiving time, a hummingbird, her granddaughter was watching a hummingbird coming to the feeder.
Huh.
And so she looked at it, and it turned out to be this really exotic hummingbird that was from Southern California, Baja California.
That was lost.
That was misdirected.
Wow.
And made its way up to here, and fortunately, we are able to bring it into a rehabilitator, because it's not going to survive a Binghamton, New York
winter. It wouldn't
winter.
Survive the winter, though, right?
Exactly right. It's almost as bad as Holcott Center.
How did they catch the hummingbird?
Licensed people can do that, and with special permits, and this distress wildlife permit. It's the Anna's hummingbird. So the answer to your question is leave the hummingbird feeders out there right into October, because, you know, right up until then, we might be getting some of these western hummingbirds. The rufous hummingbird nest way up in Alaska.
Yeah.
Some of them will...
And they might be passing through, right?
Well, they get misdirected. They wander east and then end up in our backyards in October. So keep the hummingbird feeder up. And if you do have a hummingbird in October... Give me a call. Send me a note. I want to know about it.
What is your email address again?
It's my name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, @gmail.com. Richard P. Guthrie @gmail.com.
And thank you for the call. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Paul in Hinsdale. Paul, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. Rich, I meant to call you a couple of months ago during the mating season, and this might be a good one for Catherine. I had a couple of finches, a gold finch and a purple finch, and they were flirting and dancing together and just hanging out. So my first question was, will a gold finch mate with a purple finch?
Usually not.
Yeah.
In fact... No.
I would say no.
Yeah.
Physically possible, or is it
anything's possible. In fact, you know, some...
But they're
some...
not attracted to each
other. No? Well, they liked each other, obviously. They're hanging
they get
out.
Along.
Birds attract each other by song and courtship, and they speak different languages, house finches and purple finches.
But Paul has evidence that they were flirtatious.
No, they were not. They were just kind of hanging out together, being nice to one another.
Don't cordial, but not close.
Don't read too much into it.
Fine. Okay. Anything else, Paul?
Yes. I got a robin's nest under the eaves of my back porch. It's been there for years, and we've had many broods coming out of it. I'm wondering if it's the same mother, or how do they claim ownership, or, you know, who takes over there?
Well, that's the miracle of spring migration. Whoever gets there first is more or less the owner of the site. And the miracle of a lot of these migratory birds is that they find their way back to where they were born time and time again. And so what you have there is the returning parent birds or the replacement youngsters that will come back to where they were born and find that nest and say happy home.
Well, thanks, Paul, for the call. How do they do that? Do they know how they do that?
Oh, it's incredible. One of the miracles of nature.
But presumably a bird... not possessing a great deal of what we would consider to be intellect or processing power. How on earth does a bird then go far, grow up, and then come back?
It's a miracle.
There are different navigation systems. Some birds navigate by the stars when they migrate at night. Other birds use a sun compass. But they do. They show
geomagnetic.
But they
fields.
Have to remember, is my point.
Well, they have a navigation system. They have to remember sort of a map. They have to have a map of
the whole trying to instill human understandings and terminology into their system is kind of overdoing it. Mm-hmm. Inside their instinctive patterns, they have the ability to navigate to places where they've never been before. Their wintering grounds in South America, for example. They go there, they find their way there, and then in the dark at night, they come back and find their way back home to the backyard in upstate New York, Massachusetts.
All right. Well, I'm not putting human traits on a bird to ask you how the heck it does that.
Well, we're trying to put it into human terms, and the simplest thing to say is we don't know. They have a mechanism that can follow geomagnetic fields.
Okay.
That can navigate by the stars, incredibly enough, and even compensate for the shifting of the stars during the course of the night.
And we know this is true because I've color banded birds and had them come back to the same sites over and over again.
Okay.
So we know that their individual identities are the same.
Site fidelity.
All right, we know they do it.
It's beautiful.
Fair enough. All right, one more. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie, Catherine Schneider, Birds, and more questions coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Catherine Schneider are here to talk birds with you. And Rich, some events coming up.
Just a few. I'd like to mention that right now we're in the peak of fall migration. The birds are heading out of town. They're going south. And most notably amongst these are the hawks and eagles that will be leaving. And I just want to bring up a couple of hawk watching sites that people can go to. The premier in our area, in my opinion, is the Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch in Oneonta, New York, down in Delaware County.
Right.
And that's where right now they're tallying hundreds of broad-winged hawks. Soon it will turn over to be the red-tail hawks. And then the star, the show of the golden eagles, that as the snow begins to fly, the golden eagles start passing through, where they'll see hundreds of golden eagles going by.
And where are they headed?
Well, it depends on the species. The broad-wing hawks go clear to South America, the Andes Mountains of Peru and Brazil. The red-tail hawks will probably be going to, let's say, Virginia, the Carolinas, Georgia. And the golden eagles, we're not quite sure. They kind of down into the Appalachian valleys of into the mountainous areas of the north central states.
Okay.
So that's it. And then another one over in Springfield is Mount Holyoke. In Springfield, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Upcoming field trips. Speaking of that area, the Hoffman Bird Club will be doing their Blueberry Hill Hawk Watch and potluck picnic on Saturday the 14th.
Okay.
This is over in the Springfield area of Massachusetts. And then they're on the also on the 14th and the 15th, they'll be doing their Berkshire BioBlitz. This is a all-encompassing scientific coverage of the area. And again, that information can be gotten from the HoffmanBirdClub.org.
It's a little nebulous, but the BioBlitz. What are we talking about?
Oh, they're going to be surveying all sorts of things, from insects to flowers to mammals to, and especially for our interest group, the birds.
Okay.
And then on that will be in Springfield Park in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Right.
So, and then in Williamstown on September 22nd. They'll be doing Linear Park in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Well, and speaking of hummingbirds, I just want to mention that Cornell University is promoting a hummingbird feeder cam, a camera watching a hummingbird down in Texas, where you can see the wide variety of those hummingbirds that are coming. And that's at birdwatchingdaily.com, birdwatchingdaily.com.
Gotcha.
And search around for the link that will get you to the hummingbird feeders.
Right.
A couple of other things. Now's the time to prepare for next spring with the backyard plantings, native flowers and berry producing things. Good time to get those things out there and keep the hummingbird feeders going.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Rich Guthrie and Catherine Schneider here to answer your bird questions on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Michael in Cambridge. Michael, you're on.
Oh, hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, and talking about hummingbirds, I was up in the St. Johnsbury Museum, and they have a board with at least 30 different types of hummingbirds on it, so you could identify them by looking at them.
Yeah, we're lucky we only have one here. We don't have to be confused by that many different kinds.
They can be challenging, especially the young ones or the females.
Okay.
Well, they move so quickly, yes. Hey, my question was about bird apps. An app for your phone to help you to identify a bird, either by sound or even by if you visualize it. But a lot of times you can hear the bird in the bushes, but you can't see them. And by the time you get near where you can see them, they fly off. So I was wondering if there was a good app that I could download on my phone that would help me identify the birds by their song.
Well, the one that pops up into mind is Merlin, M-E-R-L-I-N. That's one that's used so frequently by birders out in the field, and it's actually pretty good. But the caveat there is double check, because sometimes the Merlin result will look very convincing, but there may be something in the input data that was overlooked or not included that would have led you to a different direction. So double check the answers, but Merlin is a good place to start and to go to.
Okay, great. I'll do that. Hey, one more question. How many languages or songs does the brown thrashers sing?
Many. The brown thrasher is related to the mockingbird. It's not quite as multilinguini as the mockingbird is, but they have a variety of songs. And the mockingbird, the thrasher, and the catbird are all these mimic, what we call mimic thrushes. So they're multilingual, but they don't have the variety the mockingbird does.
Do they have their own song?
Okay.
No, not really.
No, they adopt these other songs and make it sound like their own.
Oh, I know we've talked about this before, but what is the evolutionary reason postulated that they would imitate other birds?
Good question, Ray. You're coming up with these tough ones today.
Okay. Thank you. All right, yes. You have 12 seconds to answer the question before I go to the next call.
We don't know.
Well, that was easy. All right, next call then, and we go to Kathleen in Worthington. Kathleen.
I have had over a month ago a gray, sleek gray bird in my yard with a black tail, and I went all through my bird book and couldn't find anything like it. I've never seen one before, haven't seen it again. It was here for a couple of days, and that was it. What was it?
Well, I'm going to say it may have been a catbird.
No, I looked at. Well, that's not what it looks like in the. In my bird book, anyway. Doesn't the catbird have some white on it?
No. It's gray all over.
And the tail is slightly darker, so it could look
black.
Yeah, well, it would look black. It's very dark gray.
No, this is coal black.
That sounds
contrast,
right.
I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
What, catbird?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Based on what you've said, yes.
And it's the one to be expected around here.
Which one is that on the
oh,
right?
Oh, this guy over here. There.
And if you're listening at home, Rich is holding a picture up that only I can see. So.
Yes, and the catbird, you know, under certain lighting conditions, that gray can look black.
I mean, it really doesn't look like a cat. What's up with that?
Oh, it makes
it was
a sound.
Right in the bright sunlight.
Yeah.
Oh, it was in the bright sunlight?
Yeah.
And they make a sound that sounds like a cat.
Do they really?
Yeah, they say mew.
Oh, I'll be darned. Well, Kathleen.
Yeah, it wasn't there long enough to make any sounds. Mm-hmm. He just kind of flew in and landed.
They like cover. They don't stay out in the open that often most of the time. So you're lucky you got
to
look
at it. Well,
this
wasn't really in the open. I'm surrounded by trees. It's just, you know.
Well, here's a trick you can try next time it might be around. Is you make a sound like you're calling a cat. And curiously enough, the catbird will likely respond. They will.
Here, if kitty,
go,
kitty.
You know, here we go. No. Go like this.
Okay.
Yeah, go like this. Psh, 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 psh.
Really?
Just like you're calling a cat, and lo and behold, there's the catbird in front of you.
All right, good luck with that, Kathleen. Thanks for the call. And now we go. Are you serious?
Seriously.
Yes.
It works.
No, not
no.
that.
All right, Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
All right, hi.
Hello.
Thanks. Taking my call.
Sure.
It has to do with Catherine and the atlas that you're going to try to do in the near future. Now, we've been feeding hummingbirds for 10 years at least. Mm-hmm. So we have a regular brew of hummingbirds that come to our feeder. But I've never seen a nest. And you need to have nesting sites.
Well, there.
Now, we live in a very rural area. Will there be a setup that we could call that says we've got hummingbirds? We don't know where they are, but they're somewhere near our feeder.
Well, there are different kinds of breeding evidence. You don't have to find a nest for most of these species. If you could just document that there were parents with juveniles around, that would be adequate documentation that they had bred someplace close by most of the time. So if you're asking if someone will come out and document the breeding of your hummingbirds, the chances are not very good for that. We're going to try and teach you to do that yourself. There's a lot of information on the website about how to document breeding in these birds, and it's very easy to enter the information, and we're counting on volunteers from all over the state that are interested in birds to document breeding birds in their area. We will have trained people going out and looking at birds, but we're going to need a lot of help.
And if you come up with something really, really weird, like a hummingbird, not a ruby-throated hummingbird that you say is nesting in your, somebody will check on that.
Rich will hop into the birdmobile, and he'll be over there in no time. Merle, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Oh, we lost him. Oh, I'm sorry about that, Zach. He's mad at me already. I'm sorry, Zach. Tony in Amherst. Tony, you're on.
Hi. We talk a lot about the birds extending their range northward. I mean, but what about species that are expanding the range southward? I wonder about those Bohemian waxwings and others. Are there many birds that are appearing from the north now, southerly?
Short answer, no.
Climate change is working against this for the most part.
Yeah, they're actually, there is a withdrawal to the north. Mm-hmm. There was that phenomenon. You mentioned Bohemian waxwings, but there was a phenomenon a couple of decades ago when we had this huge influx of evening grosbeaks from the Canadian northwest, for the most part, that just surged into the area, nested all over the place.
They're eruptive species. That's mostly a response to food supply.
Well, that and but the numbers were overwhelming. Right. But then they quickly withdrew, and they're basically gone. They're remnant nesting groups in the Adirondacks. We'll look for them in the Atlas Project. But beyond that, they're back in British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Tony, thank you. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Catherine Schneider here to answer your bird questions. Dan in North Adams. Dan, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I sometimes go to a fast food restaurant, and then I'll swing around and park in the parking lot, and I notice that pigeons will come from everywhere looking for a handout, you know, over the past few years. This year, nothing. No pigeons at all anywhere. Where did they all go?
Probably nowhere special.
Pittsfield.
But there's seagulls down there.
Yeah,
another puzzle.
I'm going to suggest that a couple of things might have happened. That they found a better place. They found a better fast food outlet. But more than likely, there's something like a hawk might have moved into the area and has been taking control of the number of pigeons in the area. I'm going to suggest that may be the case. Aside from that, pigeons, you know, they're pretty sedentary. Once they're there, they're pretty well stationary. They ain't going nowhere.
Okay. Dan, thanks for the call. Let's go to Raymond in Port Jervis. How are things in Port Jervis, Raymond?
How you doing? I have a question about Rockland County Hook Mountain Hawk Watch.
Yes.
Do you know when that will be this weekend or the next couple of weekends? I'm originally from Nyack, and I've been up on the hook numerous times to watch the hawks, but I forget exactly when it is.
I don't know exactly, but I'm sure they're counting now. I mean, it's the heart of hawk migration, and the hook is a wonderful place to see birds because it's high enough that the birds are really, really close.
And that's covered in your book.
Yes. It's in my book, yes.
Yes. For those who are curious about what is all about and where is Hook Mountain, Catherine Snyder's book, Birding in the Hudson Valley, will cover it.
Now, how would Raymond find out when the event is?
I would suggest going to the Mearns Bird Club.
Mearns?
M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org.
Okay. Or Rockland Audubon is also involved in that.
Rockland Audubon.
But they should have information up. But yeah. I'm sure they're counting this weekend.
Okay, yeah. Well, being in Port Jervis, I was in Westbrookville out by the Bashakill, mm-hmm. and that's another great birding area.
It sure is. That's also in my book.
Oh, there
only
you go.
The best sites.
In Wardsboro, yes.
And then one
that's
other site.
Too. Yeah, I'll have to look for the book. Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. I'll track that date down because I'd like to try to get down there and get up there again. And, top of that mountain is gorgeous up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the site down your neck of the woods, well, Port Jervis area, is actually along Interstate 84. There's that rest area just before you get to Port Jervis, and just the topography of the locale brings a lot of migrating hawks, especially later in the season.
Easy.
One of the things we really should have mentioned is that in conjunction with the field trips on Saturday for this NYSOA annual meeting, there is a hawk watch at Mohawk Mountain. Okay, so they are actually opening the Mohawk hawk watch for free this weekend.
The traps, yes.
On Sunday.
Yeah, and that's a premier hawk watch spot.
Oh, terrific. All right, let's go to Karen in Queensbury. Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
This is a question about equipment. I have a bird bath, and I love it. However, it rusted where the water set, and I tried to clean it, and I was wondering if there's some way I can, some coating I could put on that would be safe for the birds to get rid of the rust.
Like Rust-Oleum or something?
Something a little safer than that, I hope.
I would think you.
I would think you could paint it.
Painting?
I mean, if you sand it down and paint it, I would think that that would be fine.
And I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't do anything now. I would wait until after the you shut it down for the winter, and then take some remedial measures there. There are some commercial products out there that are rust removers, but you don't want to have any residue there when you refill it. So you want to give it time to be thoroughly cleaned out afterwards.
Yeah,
and then go along with that. But there are some commercial products that are available for removing rust.
And then I could paint it.
And then you can clean it, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. We appreciate the call. Over now to Eleanor and Troy. Eleanor.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi.
I just had a quick question. Some little birds built a nest in our hanging planter on our front porch, and it was quite a huge nest, and I think they had 4 babies. Mm-hmm. We watched them feed them, and they seem to have left just yesterday or today. So I just wanted to know, will they return to the nest or not? And maybe is it safe to take the planter down since all the flowers are dead? I think they're wrens.
Sounds like a Carolina wren. They just love hanging planters.
Yeah.
I mean, if they fledged, I think you could do that.
Yeah, I think okay. So. It's right about now, Catherine's experience is a little extraordinary, but that's Catherine's major attraction for birds in the backyard. But
yeah,
I think the nesting season is pretty well shut down. So
but once they leave, they don't come back.
Not until next spring.
And they won't reuse, a Carolina wren won't reuse a nest in a hanging planter, I don't think.
No.
Especially because you'll probably take it down.
Yeah, it'll be down. All right. I didn't want to take the home down.
Oh, no, you're doing good.
All right. But what if she puts the planter back up in the same spot?
Then they'll probably come back, especially if they were successful. This returning to the same nest is often related to whether they pulled off the young successfully.
All right. Now, Catherine Schneider, once again, tell us about the event this weekend. You have about 15 seconds.
Okay. The New York State Birders Conference and NYSOA Annual Meeting, that's the New York State Ornithological Association meeting, starts this Friday, and it's in Kingston. It's sponsored by the Catskill Center, and it's being held at the Best Western in Kingston, New York.
Well, thank you very much. Rich Guthrie, if people want to get in touch with you.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Spell Guthrie for us.
G as in George, U-T-H-R-I-E. Richard P. Guthrie.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. A lot of fun, as always. And we're just about out of time. Sorry if you didn't make it through. We'll do this again. Support comes from Lakeview Orchard, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Apples, peaches, pumpkins, winter squash, apple cider, cider donuts, kapusta, galumpki, pierogi, kielbasa, lakevieworchard.com. At Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting Fresh Grass Festival with Green Sky, Bluegrass, Calexico, and Iron and Wine, Mavis Staples, Canyon Rangers, and Leftover Salmon, September 20th through 22nd, massmocha.org. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie and Catherine Schneider for being here. Thank you for calling. Always great calls on The Bird Show. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who only got mad at me once today, and that's a new record. Kayleen White answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, I'll write this down. Tomorrow, 2 p.m., just jot it down. The Science Forum reconvenes. Get your questions ready. Give us a call. Right now, stay tuned for 51%.